Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded, blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Weekly Connect here on RNIB Connect Radio. This is the programme and the place where you get to talk about any of the issues that matter to you as a blind or partially sighted person. Coming up this week, we are going to be finding out how you can play your part at RNIB with Natalie Swiderska from the RNIB Connect team. We'll also be hearing your views this week on public transport that you've been sending to us. And as it was Mother's Day recently, we thought it would be a good idea to tell you about an organisation dedicated to supporting blind mums and dads online.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
But first, a quick note on last week's programme. Due to the bad weather, we were unable to get the show ready in time for air. But never fear, we are back. Well, I am, with another packed hour for you this week. And not a snowflake in sight, thank goodness. Now, this week marks the start of World Glaucoma Week, which attempts to raise awareness of the eye condition. Glaucoma is an eye condition where your optic nerve is damaged by the pressure of the fluid inside your eye. Most types of glaucoma have no symptoms, so a regular eye test is the only way to know you have the condition. World Glaucoma Week is an opportunity to raise much-needed awareness, and this year, the International Glaucoma Association is focusing on the prevalence of glaucoma and the rising number of people living with it. Ted Garway-Heath is a professor in ophthalmology at the University of London. He is also part of the International Glaucoma Association. He told me who is most at risk of contracting the disease.
Anybody is at risk, so over the age of 40, about 1 in 50 people will actually have glaucoma. It increases with age, so elderly people are more at risk, with 1 in 20 people over the age of 80 having glaucoma. There are certain other groups, such as people with African and Caribbean heritage, where glaucoma is almost four times more likely than it is in Western European populations. And people with a family history for glaucoma are also more at risk.
And a lot of people just probably don't know that. And especially, as you say, in those particular groups and in those particular minorities, have no idea of this. But also, in addition to this, there was an interesting fact I had read, and you can clarify this for us. In regards to those who know about glaucoma, even they are aware that there's no known symptoms or no symptoms that show up, certainly to me or to you. But if we were to go to an optician, for example, we would be able to find out if we had glaucoma. So it's really important people go to their optician.
That's right, yes. Research commissioned by the International Glaucoma Association found that of people who had heard of glaucoma, 20% knew that in its advanced stages it could cause vision loss. But almost half did not know that there were no symptoms early in the course of the disease. And that means that people can have the condition without being aware of it in any way. That's the reason that we encourage people to go for routine eye checks, because the only way it will be picked up is with an examination by an optician. So we recommend people over the age of 40 should go every 2 or 3 years, and more frequently if you're in an at-risk group, so that if you have a family member with glaucoma or if you have African or Caribbean heritage, then more frequent visits are valuable.
So there's no symptoms at all. There's no way you would know, I would know.
That's right. There's no way you can test yourself at home. The optician would do three simple tests to assess either the risk for glaucoma or the presence of glaucoma. That's an air puff check of the intraocular pressure. That's the pressure inside the eye. It's a check of the field of vision to assess the amount of vision in the periphery, so that the patient sits and views a screen and presses a button when they see lights flashed in various parts of the field of vision. And the third test is the optician looking at the nerve to assess the health of the nerve. So very simple tests that are not invasive in any way.
Do you think there's people out there that just think, if I get it, then that's it, I'll lose my sight? So, you know, that's just the way it is. People don't understand that this is preventable.
Yes, I mean, as people get older, they very often expect declining eyesight, and they don't realise that one of the reasons for declining eyesight can be completely preventable. The treatments for glaucoma are very effective. We usually start with eye drops to control the pressure in the eye, and there's research ongoing to evaluate laser treatment as an initial treatment. And in most people, eye drops or the laser will control the pressure. In a few people, in a smaller percentage of people, the drops will not be sufficient to control the pressure. And then there are other interventions that we have, such as other laser treatments and surgical treatments, operations to lower the pressure in the eye.
Wendy Leckerman has glaucoma after living with optic hypertension. She says her research into the eye condition made a real difference and potentially saved her remaining vision.
When I was originally diagnosed, I did find it quite frightening because at that point I didn't really feel I knew enough about it. But once you actually find out and do a wee bit of research into it, I started to find it's not the end all. It was at the early stages, and that I was determined that I was going to somehow try all the avenues to see if I could get it. You can't, obviously, once you get glaucoma, you've got it, but to try and stop it from getting worse, prevent it from getting worse. I was at the consultants in Glasgow, where I had two or three trab operations, which failed very badly. And after the failure of the third one, they basically said in Glasgow that there isn't much they can do any further, and that I would just have to kind of just see what happens over time. For me, that was a very stupid answer from consultants, very timid answer, and that there really is not such a thing as you can't take something further. So I did a lot of research myself, and also a member of the IGA, the International Glaucoma Association, and managed to get Moorfields as the home of excellence for the eyes. And I contacted one of the professors down there, who was delighted to take my case on board. And from there, I've had a lot of operations, but it has been well worth it, because they've now got to the stage that my eyesight hopefully will not get any worse.
World Glaucoma Week is obviously intended to raise awareness of glaucoma, but it's also to encourage consultants in eye hospitals, charities and organisations working in the sight loss sector around the world to work more closely together. Marc Renault is a technician in ophthalmology at a leading sight hospital in Montreal. He says partnership working is vital to saving sight.
Once a year with our partners of the Quebec Glaucoma Foundation, or with the people of the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, Quebec section. Once a year, just once a year, because we don't have that much funding, we do this kind of awareness day, Glaucoma Awareness Day. Sometimes it's a shopping center, once it was even in a metro station. And we just ask people if they want to have their eyes checked. So if people haven't had an eye checkup in the last 5 years, or maybe never had one before, then roughly in one day we can see about 77 to 80 people. Consistently, for the last 5 years, we have detected in people who have never seen an optometrist or an ophthalmologist, or had seldom seen an eye care specialist, at least 10% of these people had an undiagnosed disease, and on that, the majority was glaucoma. So information is important. We need to get people to get to see doctors, to have their eyes examined and checked, and then you need some kind of proper follow-up, because again, you may have the best doctors in the world, the best hospitals, the best equipment. If ultimately the patient does not put their drops in their eyes, or do not follow or not adherent to treatment, somewhere we're losing them. Something's going to happen to their vision. So that's why, again, we appeal to people's intelligence by giving them this extra knowledge. And we are certain that will change attitude, that will help have people keep their vision.
As Mark says, one of the most regular treatments someone with glaucoma is likely to administer themselves with is eye drops. In fact, treatment with drops can often prevent glaucoma causing sight loss. Alex Morris has optic hypertension and offers some important tips to ensure you take your drops regularly and safely.
I take eye drops twice a day, and therefore it's important to establish a routine and do them at the same time every day. Breakfast is a good time, and perhaps just before you go to bed. There is a risk of infection with eye drops. I always wash my hands before I begin to put my eye drops in, and I also wash my hands when I have finished putting in the eye drops. When you open the lid of the eye drops, it's important to put it on its side rather than downward on the surface of the table. This will reduce infection. And when you use the eye drops, it's very important that the eye drops do not touch the surface of the eye, as this reduces the chances of any infections. I move my eyelid to create a sort of pocket, and that helps the drops to go in, and I can feel they have. I usually blink a couple of times to make sure the eye drops are circulating around the eye. In order to keep the bottle sturdy, you can either balance it on the bridge of your nose or hold it against your forehead. It's quite a good idea to put your finger on the corner of your eye and hold it there for about 30 seconds. This should stop the problem of any medicine taste entering your system. In the evenings, before I go to bed, I put my eye drops in the bathroom, and I find it helpful to use a magnifying mirror to ensure that the medicines are correctly applied. Sometimes I find it difficult to actually hold the eye drop container. I sometimes wrap a tissue around it, but I gather there are special devices you can get from the pharmacist to help you do this if you want to. Now, generally, more medicine will come out of the container than you need. Don't worry about this. The eye will have had its dose, and you can just wipe it away with a tissue. I take eye drops because I suffer from ocular hypertension, high eye pressure, but lots of other conditions where people take eye drops. It's important to continue to make sure that you can take your eye drops regularly unless you're told to stop by your doctor.
When you live with a visual impairment, it's so important to have support, even if it's only a chat with people who have a similar condition. Ruth Reidrich is the Eye Clinic Liaison Officer at the University Hospital of Wales in Cardiff. She talks about their local support group.
It's a project I've been working on with the International Glaucoma Association representative, Errol Williams, for a while now. It's one of the busiest clinics in the hospital, and it impacts on a huge range of people of a huge range of ages. There are other groups here in Cardiff. There's the macular group for people with macular degeneration and groups of people with retinitis pigmentosa. And we're just really, really keen to fill this gap and to provide an opportunity for patients with glaucoma to, in a very informal setting, get information, share experiences, ask questions in a very safe environment where no one's going to say to them, oh, that's a stupid question, or why on earth do you want to know that? Just so that they can also meet other people who maybe have been coming to the clinic longer than them and can share their experiences and offer reassurance. But also there's a real kindred spirit from meeting people that are going through what you're going through that often helps more with anxieties and worries than meeting someone like me and asking questions to me, because with the best will in the world, I've not got an eye condition and therefore I've never experienced what they're going through.
Wendy Leckerman says if you are told you have an eye condition, it's important to get all the facts.
I really wanted to tell everybody my story because I felt that there's a lot of people that would be in the same boat as myself who have hit a brick wall and don't know what to do. A lot of consultants are very much fine to diagnose and treat people who have just the normal condition of glaucoma. If you have something whereby you heal very quickly, then all the treatment, normal treatment and medication that you get doesn't generally tend to work. I've had a bare velt tube fitted, which is an implant in the eye, which acts as a kind of pump to take the water, the fluid, the build up of fluid in the eye out. So therefore the drainage, which is really glaucoma, is helped and that there are places such as Moorfields that are available for people if they feel that, you know, up in Scotland especially, that they're not getting any further down the line with their treatment.
There's lots of information about glaucoma on RNIB's website. Just search for RNIB glaucoma. There's also a brilliant resource page on the International Glaucoma Association website, which details all of the various support groups in the UK. Search for International Glaucoma Association Support Group UK for more. It's expected that 76 million people around the world will have glaucoma by 2020. Learn more on Twitter using the hashtag WGW18 for this year's World Glaucoma Week and join the conversation. This is the Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Good to have your company. Now, RNIB is your organisation and the charity is doing more than ever to get you involved. Simon Polly speaks now to Natalie Swiderska to find out more about how you can play your part here at RNIB.
RNIB would like you to get involved more, part of the Connect community, and shape the charity as it goes forwards and have your opinions listened to. And Play Your Part comes up with many opportunities that you might want to get involved with. Natalie Swiderska joins us. Hi, Nat.
Hi, Simon.
So tell us a bit more about Play Your Part, because you're in amongst it.
Yeah. Well, it's exactly what you said, really. Play Your Part is lots of different opportunities for you to play your part, get involved, share your opinion and give us your experiences, tell us what you think, to lots of different types of work and projects that we're doing. Some of it is internal to RNIB, so it's things that we are leading on, but also Play Your Part on the discussion boards on our website also hosts lots of opportunities from external companies, organisations, researchers, PhD students and lots of people like that. So it's very varied, lots of different things that you can get involved with, hopefully something that will interest everybody. And we've got one this week. It's a joint project with RNIB and the Royal College of Art. We are doing a year-long project we're doing some research to help the general public understand the experiences of people with visual impairment. So it's going to be running from March, and we're looking for about 10 people. For this one, you should be able to get to London for a kind of research session. It's an informal discussion just with people who have got different experiences of their sight impairment, just to talk about how they feel about being in the community and some of the things that they think about when they're out and about with the general public. It's a two-hour session, and there will be other opportunities throughout this year-long project for others to get involved. But if you are interested, the main researcher at the Royal College of Art is leading on this. I'll just give you a number now, just so there's no confusion. It's 0207-223-7705, and her name is Luca. So if you want to get in touch, please do. If there's any confusion and you need to phone the Connect team just to get that number again, you can phone our main RNIB Connect team in Peterborough.
And we'll let you know how you can keep up with the various opportunities a little later. But it is so varied, isn't it? Because sometimes it could be somebody looking to make a documentary. It could be a computer game. It's so varied, though.
Yeah, there's absolutely loads of different things. Like you say, we've had one about a computer game. We've had one about accessible television. We've had one about the PIP process. We've had one about shopping experiences for Zara stores. That's been one that's come through from a student recently. So lots and lots of things, very varied, and I think they will continue to change. We've got a few in the pipeline coming up for the ophthalmology department, and a bit more kind of weighty and a bit more around their research that they're doing. So we'll tell you news about that when we get more information. But yeah, lots and lots of different things happening.
Now, you might be at home thinking, it sounds interesting, but I don't know what I'd get from that. Denise Ross joins us now on the line, Paralympian no less. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. And you've been involved with some various activities with this, haven't you?
I have. The first one which comes to mind, received a Connect bulletin saying that York University were wanting people to take part in audio enhancement, and there was contact details. I did get in touch. They were delighted and asked me to go down take part. It was a one-to-one session that I actually took part in to begin with. And it was three different exercises they did with me to do with sound. I went into like a booth where I was surrounded by about 50 speakers, and they transmitted noises through these speakers, and I had to sort of position myself to where I thought the sound was coming from. And I was told I was very precise with it. I had headphones on, so I could sort of readjust. I was sat on a seat which rotated if I wanted. I found that interesting. Then they gave me a test on a sound of a room. So there was four different rooms which I could sort of say, yeah, it's the hallway, it's in the bathroom. You know, a noise was put through so I could judge which it was. And then the third test was where they put people voices through the headphones. And I had to quote to them, well, I heard two people. It could be from one to four. And I found that very intriguing. And of course, at the end of it, I was actually given vouchers for taking part because I'd given my time up for that. My travel expenses were paid as well, which was quite good. And then I was asked to go back in August of last year, and it was to listen to a short film, which was about 25 minutes. And I didn't know which film I would be listening to. It could have been without any audio description on it. The general, what you would normally hear through the television, or their advanced version. The one I got was just the normal one, which you would get off the television. And I had to comment. There was a questionnaire, and I put my comments on that. And then I was invited back again in November, where there was a group of sighted people as well as visually impaired people of different degrees of sight. And we actually sat, it was the same film which I heard, but I got the advanced audio on that one. So I was in a position that I could comment on both, and it was like a focused group. So across the board, it was quite interesting.
Do you feel that you're listened to, that you're actually part of the team?
Absolutely. Because the focus group, we were asked for our opinions, and not everybody agreed, because we're all individuals. You know, we got certain things from it separately. And yet, they took all the information down, and we're going to progress it through it. We were given a record from that, so we could keep what everybody had said, and they said that there might be further opportunities later on. And I felt that my opinion was valued and that the staff appreciated me taking the effort to go and take part in it.
And the good thing is that sometimes we feel that decisions are made and we have no influence on this. It's great to have this opportunity, isn't it, to be a part of shaping things?
Absolutely, and this is what was important to them. They didn't want to sort of say, well, we've come up with this, this is the right one. They wanted our opinions and thoughts, and then they could feed it back to different companies who made films or, you know, series of programmes so that they could filter back to them.
Would you recommend for members of the Connect community just to get involved?
Whatever opportunity comes up, if that takes an interest to them, yes. Go ahead, go for it, because you do get something from it and you are playing a part for others as well. I think it's essential as well to do that. Obviously, apart from the York one, I set up a group in December for my local area to get people out and about. We sort of said it was health and well-being. It just doesn't have to be that. We just wanted to start off with something. And it's progressing. Hopefully we'll get more people coming to it. I think we had 10 at the initial one when we launched it. And I spoke to somebody just recently on Monday, and we were bouncing ideas off each other and sort of going into things which you wouldn't think of. We were talking about power boating down the river for, you know, family, friends and carers or, you know, supporters to come and help along. And it was just things we were doing that, you know, it might only be enough one thing, but we want people to come and try it. But then obviously have regular things. I've got quite a few people who are interested in doing indoor bowling, and we're going to be able to set that up on a weekly basis.
So it's sort of growing and evolving then, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. You know, you can put these ideas out. And we say to people, you don't have to come to everything. You come to the ones which are interest to you or you want to take part in. But we try and vary it. You know, there's a social element as well. We can get put, you know, people in to do talks, speak about various things. So we're just leaving it up to them to sort of come to us with ideas, and then hopefully we can put into process for them.
So, Natalie, it sounds as if things are all coming together now.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good. One of the things I think I was going to mention is that something that Denise talked about at the very beginning is she heard about the audit description from a bulletin. And if people want to actually receive this bulletin, they can get it in any format. It's called the Connected Bulletin, and it does offer a few, it highlights a few of these opportunities each time we are able. But it also is starting to share some more in-depth information about the organisation and kind of what we're working on and thinking about and sort of developing. So it kind of gives some background to R&IB as an organisation and where we're sort of looking to change things. And some of the different teams and different departments, different staff are kind of giving us updates every month as to their area of work, and some of the opportunities kind of then stem from that. So it's quite an interesting bulletin. It is got lots of useful information in. So if you're kind of some of those people who like to know what we're up to, this might be something for you. And again, if you want to get the Connected Bulletin, you can contact the Connect team and they'll sign you up.
So Denise, you're going to encourage everybody to get involved and have their say?
Yeah, I'd love that. You know, in fact, you can give them the information and sort of say, come on, you know, put your part in. It's going to make a difference to lots of people. And the more we can get involved, the better. The one other thing I would like to mention, that my region, which is obviously the northeast, we are holding for the whole area on the 22nd of March. It's going to be a social event to let them know, you know, we want their views, what they would like the Connect people to put on in the next 12 months. Maybe have a quiz after lunch. You know, networking, because obviously my area, we actually, yesterday, we set up what we call a network committee. We're the first one in the whole country to be able to get a committee up and running. We're not fully full members yet. We've got 9, and our target is to get 14, but obviously we'll be having to do some more marketing to get more people onto that committee. We're a wide range of ages, young and more senior ones. We've got male and female. Unfortunately, we haven't got different cultures yet because they haven't applied, but we will try to encourage them to be able to do so.
Natalie, how do we get up to date with everything and make contact and even take part in the message boards as well?
Yeah, so the best way to get involved in any kind of thing you want to do, and that includes kind of sharing your story just more generally, like Denise has just now, just talking about some of the things she's been up to and some of the things that's happening locally. You can go to the RNIB website, our community pages, that's www.rnib.org.uk/community, and there's lots of discussion boards there. You'll find a play your part board there, and you'll also find our new quick poll feature, which is becoming quite popular now, which is good to hear. You can also call the Connect team in Peterborough, that's the national kind of telephone line, which is 0303 1234 555, and they can direct you and tell you about anything that's happening either locally or nationally. Finally, just to remind you again, if you do want to get the Connect Bulletin directly to you, which again talks about some of the Play Your Part opportunities and also talks about the organisation as a bigger entity, just again mention that to the Connect team and they will sign you up.
plenty going on, and we'll keep you all up to date with all the opportunities on a regular slot. For the meantime, Natalie Swiderska and Denise Ross, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
Thanks to Simon there. Now let's get connected. Now, you may be familiar with the volunteer role of connector. You've probably heard about it here at RNIB. Well, after working with some of the current connectors and ex-connectors, the role has changed to become more flexible and enable you, the community, to volunteer in the way you want to. Now, you'll see roles and hear about roles of RNIB Connect Community Lead and Connect Community Volunteer. These are updated roles and they're advertised on the RNIB website, but you can also get in touch with us by phone if you want to. The number is 01733 375 450, even if you just want to find out a bit more about the opportunities. The number 01733 375 450 is the number to call. Now, RNIB Connect launched the Volunteer Council last autumn as a way to get regular feedback and consultation with volunteers from a variety of roles to make sure you get your say. Well, volunteers sign up to the council for a year, and we're looking for new members in summer this year. So if you would like to find out more and perhaps get involved in that, then email this address, volunteeringsupport@rnib.org.uk, or you can get in touch with the team via RNIB's helpline, which is 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Now, of course, we're always on the lookout for new volunteers to support and share experiences on living with sight loss courses. Our confidence-building roles are again being advertised on the website, rnib.org.uk. And Suti is 70, and we're looking for you to help support him as part of his 70th birthday and us as part of our 150th anniversary. So do check this out on social media at RNIB. You can also get more details on the website, rnib.org.uk/Suti.
Since the 1st of March 2018, the new polymer note featuring Jane Austen is the only Bank of England £10 note with legal tender status. The new £10 note is printed on polymer, a thin, flexible plastic, and features the portrait of Jane Austen. It's slightly smaller than the existing paper £10 note, and to help blind and partially sighted people identify the value, on the front there are two clusters of raised dots in the top left-hand corner. Some banks or building societies may still accept paper £10 notes, but this is at their own discretion, and most retailers will no longer accept the old paper note. But if you have any old paper notes still in your possession, you can exchange Bank of England banknotes, which have been withdrawn for circulation, in person or by post. For more information, you can head to www.bankofengland.co.uk.
During March and April, RNIB is bringing together people affected by sight loss. We want to explore how together we can make positive changes in your life, local community and wider society. So if you, a parent or child, is affected by sight loss, join us as we look to the future at one of our community engagement events in Enniskillen, Derry Londonderry, Armagh, Cookstown, Downpatrick and Belfast. Call RNIB now on 02890 329 373 or visit rnib.org.uk/connectni. RNIB, supporting people with sight loss.
Give a little time, make a big difference. RNIB's amazing volunteers help us reach the people who need us most. We need your skills, expertise and passion so that together we can support blind and partially sighted people to live confident, independent lives. Volunteering your time for us is a great way to meet people, learn new skills and expand your horizons. We have more than 100 different volunteering opportunities across the UK. If you only have a few hours to spare, we'll have something to suit you. Why not give it a try? Visit rnib.org.uk/volunteering or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 and help us make every day better for people affected by sight loss.
Do you love sleuthing out with Poirot, but find one Agatha Christie mystery is just never enough? Perhaps you like to escape into a world of fantasy and enjoy travelling with the hobbits to Mordor, but hate when you're only going along for part of the J.R.R. Tolkien journey. Why settle for one book when you could have a whole series of adventures? The RNIB shop is having a flash sale on selected Daisy audiobook box sets. Visit our online shop at shop.rnib.org.uk or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 to find out more. Please note, offer is only available while stock lasts. So act now to open up a complete collection of fantastic stories for your Daisy player.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, lots of you out there have been getting in touch with us to tell us about your thoughts on public transport. Here's your view this week.
I use public transport every day. I work in London, so I commute. I'd say that it's got easier to use public transport independently in London over the past 10 or so years, simply because more forms of it talk. So you have stop announcements on buses. I think all the tube lines talk now, whereas probably about half of them did when I first moved to London about 15 years ago. I've long since abandoned asking bus drivers to tell me where the stops are. Fortunately, the talking announcements by and large render that redundant, particularly when paired with the GPS app. And I abandoned it largely because I've had, you know, some of the experiences that others have had, which is that, you know, people sometimes forget. And so now that buses talk, I'm taking them more often than perhaps I used to. One problem I wish they'd solve in London particularly is that multiple buses tend to stop at a single bus stop, and sometimes they'll stack one behind another, and other than the lead bus you won't always know what's in behind it. Sometimes the driver of a second or third bus will stop again, but sometimes they'll go barreling past. You can ask, obviously, or get those cards and hold a number up. And sometimes you can use the travel apps to guess whether a bus may or may not be in behind if you sort of look at when they're due to stop. But neither of them are perfect, or none of those are perfect solutions. But it would be good if they sorted that out.
I use a lot of transport here in London, because public transport, that is, because I'm blind, I'm a guide dog user, and as a piano tuner, my job means I have to get to the customers. They can't bring their pianos to me. What I'd like to say is that things have massively improved over the last 30 years, especially on the London Underground. They're much more blind aware, they're much more helpful. I do worry a little bit about sometimes there's not much staff around, or many staff around, but generally when you're travelling the underground, the help is great these days. Not quite so good on the trains. They do their best. But again, this is all reference to London, because London Bridge has been completely rebuilt by stages. So I've never asked for so much help before, because there's no point in training the dog to go from a platform to another platform at London Bridge at the moment, because sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. Bridges disappear, escalators are being put in, so that's just constantly changing. So I'm always try and get help if I can't avoid London Bridge. The other thing is buses. London buses talk. That's fantastic. I will say that the odd bus driver will go past me at the bus stop. I expect they think, well, I didn't put my hand out. We do get request stops still. And they shoot past. Very annoying, but it happens sometimes. And other times, buses turn up and the drivers shout out what numbers they are. So, you know, it's a mixed bag of help and sometimes not help. Also, with public transport now, the apps on the smartphones are great. The London Bus app I use here, and the train times for the trains gives me live updates on all the times. That's really help. And that's sometimes how I know that the bus just went past my bus stop, was the one I was waiting for. A couple of other things, I suppose, not quite so good. The hybrids, aren't they? Electric diesel buses. they can come and go without me knowing. I've actually missed my bus because I didn't hear it arrive, because the background traffic noise was very loud. And also, I nearly got caught by one of them coming out of a bus garage because I simply didn't hear it. It was just on the electric as they start to move away, and I didn't hear it coming. So a little bit worried about that side of things in years to come. But generally, it's a thumbs up for most of the public transport. The technical improvements, you know, like announcements on the buses, is great. Even today, when I was coming back from Hammersmith, I noticed that they're starting to say what the next station is way before you get to the next underground stop. So you actually hear it announced twice, which is great because the noisy environment. So my experience is not always been good, but it's got better as a guide dog user, because that's very important. You know, you do need help. You don't want people to be frightened of your dog, and this blindness awareness that they've been obviously training their staff has really sort of paid off. So hats off.
Hi. I use public transport every day. I have to catch two buses into work. I live in Newcastle, Staffordshire, and I actually work in Stoke-on-Trent. So it's a two-bus journey to get into work. And I dread that part. It's worse than going and walking somewhere and actually getting lost. I think that the drivers on the bus are not disability aware. I hate it when you're actually standing at a bus station and perhaps more than one bus may pull up at that stand. And nobody, the driver doesn't, even though they see you with a guide dog, they don't get off the bus and actually say to you, do you want to catch number blah blah bus, so that you can actually say yes or no. So you're there standing hearing the buses approach and thinking to yourself, is this my bus or is it not? Now if you're standing by a post as well, say where rather than a stand, sometimes there's like these posts with the sign above it that says bus stop, and perhaps several buses stop at that stop, again it's the same problem. The drivers will see you at the stop. This is the drivers in Stoke-on-Trent anyway. They will see you at the stop and they won't bother to shout, or not all of them actually, I'm being unfair, but most of them do not stand, do not get off the bus and say, you know, is this your, do you want this bus, to give you the option. So you're standing there feeling very vulnerable at that time. And if it wasn't for the general public actually coming and asking which bus you want and whether you need help, if it wasn't for the general public, I think that my journey would be a hell of a lot harder than it is, and it's hard enough as it is. But I think actually that there should be more focus upon training these bus drivers to look out for what visually impaired people need, and then people like us wouldn't be so dependent upon the general public if the bus drivers were doing their job properly. That's just my opinion.
I think the fact that in this country there are assistance and aid available for those with disabilities and other impairments who wish to travel around is a great thing and should be celebrated. However, the system is far from perfect and does require a lot of improvement. The fact that employee numbers are being cut in London doesn't help those travellers who have a disability and a visual impairment, because most often they are disadvantaged when they are compared with other travellers, because they often have to wait around for assistance. Sometimes communications breakdown leads to no assistance. Also, the fact that many platforms now do not have a tactile line to indicate to someone with a visual impairment that they are approaching the edge of the platform is disappointing. However, I hope that complaints will be taken seriously and campaigners will pick up on these facts and push for further improvements.
Thanks for your views on public transport. If you've got something you want to say, email us theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, it's the topic that makes everyone's eyes roll: Brexit. However, one aspect of this that hasn't been discussed at all is the impact on us as blind people. Our reporter in Brussels, Georg von Harich, has been speaking to Jude Curtin-Darling, Labour MEP, to try and find out if the political divorce will have a negative impact on our lives.
Well, I think there are a number of dimensions that are important for blind and partially sighted people across the UK. There's obviously what will remain in UK law in terms of anti-discrimination legislation and all of the rules which have been built up at EU level around equal rights, and whether that's in employment or whether it's in access to services, in the way we've just had big piece of legislation going through the European Parliament around accessibility and the way that services have to be accessible to everybody, including people with visual impairment or blindness. But then there are other dimensions that people might not automatically be thinking about, such as access to reading materials. We've had a lot of work in the last few years in the European Parliament to get the adoption of the Marrakesh Treaty in Europe, which would allow access to reading materials for blind and partially sighted people, access to materials in Braille and in better sized print. And that treaty is an international treaty which the EU is the signatory. Now, leaving the EU, the UK will have to ratify all of these international treaties of which we're a signatory as a result of our EU membership. And there is a danger that there could be a vacuum where we've left the EU, but not all of those international agreements have come into UK law and have been ratified by the UK. So there's a mixture of elements, the rules which are primarily in EU law, which we need to make sure are protected in UK law and not watered down, not subject to statutory instruments in Westminster where secretaries of state could repeal them without full consultation, without any kind of parliamentary process, the so-called Henry VIII powers, but also then what happens to international agreements where they're of benefit for blind and partially sighted people.
When it comes to that issue of equality legislation, the UK has always been quite keen on that that area. So couldn't the UK, you know, go that alone and pursue equality legislation, pursue legislation for people with disabilities without the... It doesn't need the EU to do that.
No, of course. Of course, even today, EU legislation is minimum standards legislation. So the UK is always free, inside or outside the EU, to go further and to provide better protection, better rights for people with disabilities. I guess the danger is if we have a hard Brexit, and Brexit is very costly to the UK economy, very costly to the Exchequer, some of that equalities legislation demands public investment. If it's about adapting public infrastructure, if it's about ensuring accessibility to public buildings, the question is a practical question. Will there be the resources available to ensure better accessibility for people with disabilities? But in terms of rights in law, of course, today the UK would be in a position to provide far better protection if they wanted to, if we wanted to as a country, then is provided by that minimum legislation at European level. But that minimum legislation provides a safety net under which no European country should fall.
Another piece of legislation that's often cited as useful for blind and partially sighted people is medicines and Braille on all medicines packaging. Just explain very briefly, without getting too techie, what that is and what could happen to that after Brexit, do you think?
Well, lots of the legislation around labelling and around packaging is single market legislation, common rules across the single market. And that relates to medicines, it relates to other products as well. If we fall out of the single market and we fall out of cooperation around pharmaceutical sector or other products, then obviously those rules could be changed in the UK, and there could be a question about whether UK companies are obliged to maintain the same standards in the future. I should say that it would really surprise me if pharmaceuticals companies stepped back from that kind of accessibility in their packaging, but it's clear that if we leave the single market, then we're not subject to those common standards across the European Union, and then there would be a freedom to diverge, as the government say.
Georg von Harich speaking to Labour MEP Jude Curtin-Darling at the European Parliament in Brussels. Now, finally this week, we focus on a society or organisation aiming to support people with sight loss, and as it was Mother's Day just the other day, it seemed appropriate for us to find one that supports blind mums and dads.
Hi, I'm Kim. I've been blind since birth, and I'm involved with an organisation called Blind Mums Connect, so I'm often the first point of contact for everybody.
I'm Sally Clay. I am visually impaired. I'm a mummy of a five-year-old. When I was about 12 weeks pregnant, a friend of mine said you should get in contact with them. I think at the time it wasn't Blind Mums Connect, it was just literally an emailing list at that point. And so it really wasn't the big thing that it is now.
We now have a website, blindmumsconnect.org.uk. We're approaching 200 members. A lot of that's just done by word of mouth through our Facebook group, email list, and we run various Skype groups.
What I got out of it straight away was on the phone chats. So the first thing that I was interested in was, how the heck am I going to carry this baby around? Because I use a white cane. I've got no useful vision at all. Through Blind Mums Connect, I met up with some girls and they showed me the sling that they had, and it was absolutely brilliant. And I used that until my daughter was four. So that was one of the things that they helped me with, find a good solution for carrying my daughter.
It's just about knowing other people and talking to other people that are going through what you're going through. Sometimes it's those extra little things like, how do you make up formula when you've got no sight at all? I feel, for me, Blind Mums Connect has been an absolute massive help, which is why I'm now so heavily involved, because when I was pregnant and when I had a newborn child, my mum would help or my friends would help, but none of them quite knew what I was going through, not being able to see, and how things are just sometimes that little bit different.
The other thing was, most importantly actually, how to make up a bottle, because I didn't know how to do it, and I was really worried because I'd planned to breastfeed and it hadn't worked out, and I thought, oh God, I don't know what I'm going to do because I have no idea how I'm going to make these bottles up without giving my daughter gastroenteritis or something horrible. What I did was to email the list, and they sent me a whole load of sheets that they'd made up on how to make formula when you can't see, and also how to feed the baby when you can't see with a bottle. You can just weigh it out on the talking scales, and generally they're pretty accurate. I mean, they're not 100%, but I don't think always sighted people get it 100% accurate. And I made loads of bottles that way. I felt really confident. And also with the way that I fed my daughter, I fed her in a bit of an unconventional way. So she was sitting on my knee with her back facing my tummy. And I could feel her face then, so I knew exactly where the bottle was going. I wasn't going to poke it in her eye.
We generally used to make connections. Our Facebook group is incredibly busy. People want to make friends. They want to be able to share tips. They want to ask questions in a space that's safe with people that understand. And then to move that on and to form friendships. And I think that's what we're really here for, is to bring people together.
I have these amazing Skype groups as well. There's mums of all age kids. There's mums with teenagers. I think there are a couple of grandmas as well. Everybody from tiny babies or bumps even.
I get very affected by people who are on their own, or people who suddenly lost their sight and then suddenly feel that they're not going to be able to cope with a child. That upsets me a lot on a personal level, because nobody should ever really feel like that. I've been very, very affected by people who are just totally isolated, people who have gone through abuse, people who have had to fight to prove that they can look after their children just because they're blind, and that shouldn't be happening, and it's incredibly sad. I often feel how lucky I am that I didn't go through that when people can wake up with no sight and a small child or lose their sight in pregnancy. And that must be absolutely terrifying. And those people and their strengths and how they find us, they show determination. We've had people who can't use technology but have made an effort to learn so they can be on our Facebook group because they want the support. And I think that's pretty incredible.
Blind Mums Connect suggested that I get a single room in the hospital and that I get taken around the hospital and shown where to go and, you know, familiarised with the environment. And actually that proved to be really useful because I was in there for 10 days after Alice was born. So I was in there for ages. And if I hadn't known where I was going, I would have been completely out of it and I wouldn't have been able to do anything. And also the single room really helped because it meant that I was familiar with it and I wasn't having to worry about knocking into other people's beds or, you know, treading on people's babies or whatever, you know, that it was really, really helpful. I've always been very lucky that I've been able to get out and about. When I first had my daughter, I lost all my confidence with getting around. I thought, oh my God, I've got her in this sling and if I whack her into something, I'm, you know, and I didn't want to go out and I didn't want to do anything. And you get this real fear, panic response. And this is from somebody who's really confident. Since then, I have been involved with some of the Skype groups and helping out new mums by giving them the benefit of my experience and how I went through the process of becoming much more confident with my daughter and learning. It was almost like learning how to walk again. The way they teach breastfeeding in the hospital is like not VI friendly at all. They give you all this advice that basically involves sight and you can't do it that way. The breastfeeding peer support is really important because we can breastfeed. And loads of blind people do, but they do it in a little bit of a different way. And that is very well known by the team at Blind Mums Connect and not well known to health professionals at all.
I don't want people to go through what I went through with feeling alone. I want people to know that there's something out there and there's always somebody around that can give advice or have a chat.
Blind Mums does have a really important role to play because no one's going to get what it's like for a blind person to go into an echoey church hall with toddlers all running around and how to find their way around it and meet other mums, and no one's going to quite get that like another blind mum. And they've also got partially sighted mums on there as well, and their issues again are different because they need to be able to see their children, and so they need to get the kids in high-vis clothes or whatever, you know. There's so many different things and so many different levels of sight that are all covered by that one group.
Right now, I think the future for us is we just want to get bigger and better. We want to get more people involved. But I think more than anything right now, we just want people to spread the word and we just want to bring people together.
Well, there you go. That's another Society of the Week for you. That's it. Our time is up. Thank you so much for being here. Next week in the programme, I'll be talking to Moira Walton about her experience of blindness. And since the weather has improved, we go out running, quite literally, with community facilitator Sophie Fox, who visits a running club set up for blind people in Bristol. Remember, if you have any views on anything related to sight loss, get in touch with us. Email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. We really do love getting your emails and your views. We're back next week as always, but in the meantime, remember, if it's Mondays at 1 p.m., it's The Weekly Connect. Goodbye.